Just a quick heads up that I am currently on maternity leave, which means that the Fertility Co podcast is taking a break. But please don't panic because I am already working on some exciting things behind the scenes. And when I come back, I'm really looking forward to sharing with you a brand new, completely free mini course all about ovulation and finding your fertile window. In the meantime, there are still heaps of ways that you can continue to learn about your fertility and your menstrual cycle while I take a break. If you're just getting started with charting your cycle, you can check out my free fertility roadmap. If you want to dive deeper and learn exactly when you're ovulating, then you can watch my Fix Your Fertility Masterclass. There is, of course, also my Conceive with Confidence workshop series and, of course, my flagship online program, Fertility School. If you want individualized support from a trained fertility educator, that's me, then you can book in to my waitlist for a one-on-one consult, and I would love to work with you to achieve your fertility goals in 2024. Spots are strictly limited though, and links to all of those resources are in the show notes.
I'm Rachel, and I'm obsessed with all things periods, pregnancy, pelvic floor, and helping women just like you to navigate all of life's major milestones. I'm a physiotherapist, a natural fertility educator, and my passion is teaching women how to take control of their health. Fertility, pregnancy, nutrition, and menstrual cycle health, we'll dive deep into all of it right here. All those questions you've been secretly Googling, all those things you're too embarrassed to ask your doctor, because, well, we're women. Shouldn't we just know this stuff? So get comfy and get ready to finally have all of your questions answered. Hit subscribe now and let me teach you what they never taught us in health class. Hello, another week, another epic guest expert interview for you. This week, I'm chatting with Dr. Mark Sklar, and I'm recording this little intro having just jumped off our chat, and I'm so excited for you to hear it. I know I say that all the time, but he's so full of knowledge and so full of wisdom. And I've already said to him, I want you to come back and have another chat in the future because I had so many questions for him, and I'm really excited for you to hear everything that he has to say. So Dr. Mark Sklar, also known as the fertility expert, is a natural fertility specialist helping couples to get pregnant for over 20 years. His mission is to help you to feel hopeful and confident about your fertility journey again, and you will certainly get that vibe from him during our chat. In addition to his Doctor of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine, Dr. Sklar trained at Harvard Medical School, Mind-Body Medical Institute. He is the creator of Fertility TV on YouTube, marksklar.com and reproductivewellness.com. And he's also a fellow of the American Board of Oriental Reproductive Medicine and a medical advisor for Natural Health International. As well as his online program, he also supports his community via his highly popular YouTube channel, Fertility TV, where he shares information-packed videos to educate his followers on all things fertility. The fertility expert lives in San Diego with his wife and two sons, where he has a clinic, Reproductive Wellness, and he also works with couples all over the world through his fertility online coaching, the Hope Fertility Program. Without further ado, let's dive into this chat because it is a good one. Dr. Mark Sklar, thank you so much for your time and very excited to have you on the podcast to talk all things fertility.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I love talking about this topic, as you are aware. So anytime I get the opportunity, I'm excited for it. So thanks for having me.
Oh, lovely to have you here. Can we get started with you sharing a little bit about who you are, what you do, and most importantly of all, why you do it?
Yeah, so I'm Mark Sklar. I'm a natural fertility expert, and I've been doing it for 20 years. And a lot of what I do now, the way I work with couples has evolved over the years. But a lot of what I do, and I would say probably 70-80% of my time now, is really supporting couples all over the world in various ways. Like some of it is just the content that I share on my YouTube channel. Other aspects of it are working with couples within the scope of my coaching program. So it just depends on what information they need and the kind of support they're looking for is how I work with couples. But my goal really and why I do what I do is I want couples to have a little baby in their arms. You know, that's really what it's all about for me. And that started 20 years ago when I helped the first woman become a little mommy to a little baby girl named Faith. And that changed my life forever. I mean, she named her girl Faith because she had the faith to believe that it was going to happen. And I thought that was really special. But as much as I helped her, and I actually helped her with her second as well, she doesn't realize how impactful she was to my life specifically, because this my relationship with her and how we worked together totally changed the trajectory of my career. But on top of that, it's impacted so many other couples throughout the world over these last 20 years and, you know, allowing me to do this work. And she doesn't know that because we haven't spoken very much since her second. But yeah, it totally impacted my life. To me, there's nothing more special than getting the email, the phone call, the text message, whatever it is. Nowadays, it happens on social media too, on all the different platforms. I get a message, you know, you helped me have my child. I'm pregnant now and I'm super grateful. And that to me is just all the reward that I need and why I do what I do today.
Beautiful. They are the best messages to receive, aren't they?
They are 100% the best messages to receive. 100%. Yeah.
I love that this woman and her little girl, Faith, have no idea that they've completely shaped, you know, the work that you do now. I think so many women and couples just think, oh, you know, they're just another practitioner. They're just doing their job, going about their day. And then you get so invested. You get very invested in the process for these people and very invested in their personal journey. And it's such an important thing. And I love that you don't take it lightly, because it is. It's such a special thing that you're helping women and couples with.
Yeah. I mean, really, there's nothing more magical than that, right? They get to have a child. They get to grow their family, who hopefully has generations of children. I mean, it's just a really special thing. So, no, I don't take it for granted. It's not always easy. But most of the work that we do is super rewarding, and that's what really keeps me going. Every time I get a message that someone had their baby or is pregnant, that is what keeps me going until the next one. I mean, every time. So it's really special for me to continue to do that work. And the medicine has evolved, and you know, the world has evolved over those 20 years. So the way I work with couples and the needs that they need has certainly evolved over time as well.
Yeah. So something that I'm really keen to pick your brain about in this chat is obviously all things fertility, but looking more specifically at, you know, ovarian reserve, looking at age, especially with fertility. And I've got a lot of questions for you in regards to female fertility and ovarian reserve, but you're actually the first male guest I've ever had on this podcast. So I
feel like
I need to start a male fertility question in there. I think male fertility is so often overlooked. And I think like when you think about the fact that, you know, a baby begins as 50-50, but often the process and the preconception preparation and everything else isn't 50-50. So can you explain why male fertility and preconception preparation is just as crucial as female fertility, and what steps a male partner can take to improve chances of conception from his side of things?
Yeah, I mean, you said it to start off in as part of this question, that it's 50-50. You know, there it takes two to tango, whatever cliche term we want to use to highlight that. But it's all true, right? We can't make this happen without the sperm and the egg. Now, is it? I think the egg gets highlighted a little bit more because of the complexity, a menstrual cycle, and how involved that is. And the theoretical finite number of eggs and so forth, right? So those get highlighted and there's much more information and much more time spent on it. But that should not minimize the importance of male fertility and sperm quality. We, you know, about 40 to 50% of all fertility issues are male factor related. And with that alone, that should be enough to tell somebody that that's a serious thing. Mm. Additionally, as time has gone by, and so in the last 50 or so years, male fertility has just declined at an increased rate, unfortunately. And it doesn't get highlighted because of the creation of IVF. With in vitro fertilization, we have minimized the importance of sperm quality and sperm altogether, because they really only need as many sperm as they have eggs. And so even more so, it's not just IVF. Actually, with IVF and ICSI, we've really started to minimize the importance of the sperm quality. And I don't know anybody out there who starts their fertility journey or their journey to have a child by saying, yes, tomorrow we're going to start thinking about IVF. Like, that's not how anybody starts. Everybody starts by, we want to get pregnant the old-fashioned way, you know, in bed, in our home, through natural intercourse. And if that's what our goal is, truly what our goal is, then both sides need to be responsible and do their part to improve both egg and sperm. And, you know, if we have, if I think it's also something that I like to highlight to couples to hopefully motivate them to do more when it comes to this piece. But if we have some compromising issues, let's just say, when it comes to egg quality, for whatever reason, if we have great sperm, it can help counterbalance some of those deficiencies in the egg. And vice versa, if we've got great eggs and we've got, you know, slightly poor quality or not so great sperm, that egg, if it's awesome, can really lift up the sperm. So we want to have as good quality on either side of this, because we don't know where the issues are initially. We don't know where those deficiencies are and how we're supposed to address them. So we want to have the best of both worlds as much as we can. But sperm quality can be improved relatively dramatically, very quickly, so to speak, where I do think it takes a little bit longer for egg quality to be improved. On that note, I'd say it also takes a little bit longer for egg quality to be impacted negatively. So we have this piece of when it comes to the sperm, that there's so much that we can do, but we're told that it's not a big deal. It's minimized so much in our current approach to fertility. And I do think, as I mentioned earlier, because of IVF, because if that fertility clinic only needs, if we only get 10 eggs, they only need 10 good sperm, then that's all they're going to focus on. So it's, in their eyes, it's really not that big of a deal. But if we as, you know, couples think of it as, my goal is not to get pregnant with IVF, my goal is to get pregnant naturally, then we need to improve our sperm quality as much as we can. And that means in all the parameters. And so that's where the man has to take responsibility. That's where they need to be an active participant in this process as much as women are. And I think the hard thing also for men is that there's nothing really to look at to see progress other than a semen analysis. Mm-hmm. I mean, we could use some arbitrary things like, okay, how do you feel? And do you sleep better and have more energy? And is your libido better? And, you know, we could come up with some of these things. But in the end, they can't really track things, you know, like women can from cycle to cycle. Did my menstrual cycle improve? Did my cervical mucus improve? Did my bleed improve? Like, all of these things are so nice. I used to joke many years ago that, you know, for as much of that I hear women complain about their menstrual cycles, it's such a beautiful thing to have, because it is something to keep you accountable, to be able to check to see your health, to hold you, to make you aware of, like, oh yeah, I made these changes and look at what happened, right? Or vice versa, the negative thing. But it's something that you can track almost every 30 days to see where you're at. Men don't have that. So I think when they are in this process, they just at some point, they're like, well, you know, why am I keep doing what I'm doing if I don't even know if it's working or we're not really seeing progress? So the only way for them to actually check is to give another sample, which is, you know, obviously not the end of the world, although men often make it seem like it is. But sperm quality is really, really important in that regard. And I think I say this because I see this so often, even today, and you'd think that after all these years, we wouldn't still have this barrier, and it wouldn't be so difficult to get men to be an active participant in the fertility process. But every week I have conversations with women who are frustrated by the lack of support and the lack of participation that their husbands are giving into the process. And, you know, for all the men listening out there, and I don't know how many are, because if I'm the first man on the show, I don't know how many are listening.
Some women do say they listen with their partners.
Partners, great. Yes. I love that. But for all the men listening, those are probably the partners we don't need to talk to.
They're already being proactive
if they're listening. But, you know, the reality is you know, your partners, your wives, they need you to be involved. They need to see it from you so that they can keep going on their end. They need to see it so you can help keep them going, because it's, you know, difficult for them as well. And again, you're a 50% participant in this process. You know, we need as good quality sperm as possible. So we really do need you actively engaged. And so what does that mean, right? You ask the question, well, what can they do? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, let's start with the basics. Like, if you're not doing the basics, we don't need to get into anything complicated. Right? Like, if you're not sleeping well, if you're not exercising, if you're not managing your stress, if you're not eating healthy, and I don't mean all you have to do these things perfect, and I don't think, and I'm not saying you have to do these, you know, 100% all the time, but that 80% of the time you're eating well, you're sleeping well, you're exercising, right? Like, we're just looking for above average here, that if you're doing those good things, then you are making huge, huge improvements. And I always like to share the story, which happened probably like 16, 17 years ago, but it's still true today because I see this sort of thing still happen, is that there was a man who I was working with, and they were also going through IVF at the same time. And every sample he gave was terrible. I mean, it was awful, so much so that the embryologist, they knew, you know, which one. You didn't even have to put the name with the sample, because when they would see it, they would be like, oh, this is so and so's sample. It was so bad, right? Wow. So I was at the fertility clinic that day and talking to the embryologist, and he said, you remember so and so? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, have you been working with him? And I said, yes. And he said, well, what have you been doing? Because I think we either mixed up the sample or something's wrong, or because his sample is amazing this time. And I said, well, I've been working with him for 6 months and we've had a hard time making progress. So I don't know, you know, I don't want to take credit necessarily for something that I didn't do. I mean, you can give it to me, but I don't know if it was something that I did. And so we ended up calling him and we asked him, like, what changed all of a sudden? Said, well, you know, for the last 6 months, I've been on the road and I've been traveling for work and I've been not sleeping very well and I've had a lot of stress and it's just been really difficult time. But 6 weeks ago, you know, I was given an 8-week vacation and I'm sleeping now and I'm eating well and I'm taking care of myself and I don't have any stress. And so maybe that's it. And that's exactly what it was. Right. So, like, I say this because, yes, we could do all these other things. And I'm not saying those things aren't necessary in certain circumstances, but those things are not necessary if you're not doing the basics. Like, mm-hmm. We're all looking for the magic pill, but the magic pill is not going to help you, because that's what I was using on him. I was trying to use all my magic pills and they weren't working on someone who is overly stressed, not sleeping well, not exercising, not eating well. Right. Like, you're not taking care of yourself. So the sperm, the semen analysis and the quality of sperm is an indicator for your overall health. And that's what it was for him. And so we need to just start with the basics. And then we can progress to, once you're doing all of those things and we have a baseline and we understand where things are at and maybe we need a little bit more work, that's when we make more adjustments to all of those things and start adding in other interventions like supplements or acupuncture or whatever we might want to decide at that time.
That's a fantastic way of looking at it. Just if you're not getting the basics, you're wasting your time with all of these other things. You can't supplement a bad lifestyle, a bad diet. It's common sense a lot of the time, isn't it? And that's the thing. It's so hard to get through to some people that it's, you know, they're the things you have to do.
Right. And but they don't want to give up those things.
Yes.
They don't want to give up. Like we like those habits, those lifestyles. So we don't, creatures of habit. So we don't want to give them up. We don't want to make those changes. So it's hard.
Yeah. And you'd hope that once, like, again, you're not taking semen analysis all the time, but once he's, you know, he's had his 8 weeks, he's notice these improvements, you'd hope, and that's sort of what I try and get across in all of my education, is that you want this to be a sustainable lifestyle change. You don't want to be doing all of these things for the short term to get pregnant and then go back to what you're doing. You want all of these things to be sustainable for your overall health. And you'd hope that that 8 week window would be
enough,
you know, some sort of a glimpse into this is what life could look like and how much better you'll feel. And how much better you'll sleep if you adopt these things. But I know that's easier said than done.
Yeah, it is. You know, I hear that from both sides, though. Like, I actually just have been communicating with a member of my program, and she's, you know, I said to her, she sent me her list of her supplements that she's taking, and she said, this is what I'm taking now. And I was like, well, what happened to the list that I gave you? She said, oh, I did those for 3 months and I stopped because you said at 3 months we'll recheck. I was like, it doesn't mean we just turn the light switch off. It just doesn't mean like at that time, it says we check, but we can't just stop everything. You know, so to your point, like we want to change habits. We want to change lifestyle and we want this to, you know, continue on. It's not about perfection. It's about progress. And that's, I think, a big message that we need to take away.
Exactly right. And especially if it's taking more than that, you know, 3 month magic window to conceive, if it's a longer process, you're going to have to be able to do these things for a longer period of time. And if it's too strict and too perfect, then you will fall off the wagon eventually, won't you? So you really do need it to be sustainable and manageable.
Yeah. And time frame, I think that's an important piece that you just mentioned, which was, you know, oh, if it's going to take longer than 3 months, you know, the reality is for most of us, it's going to take longer than 3 months.
It's normal to take longer than 3 months. It's
So we need to have a different approach with our mindset. And I know it's hard when you've been trying for months and months and years and years. So I understand that. But I do think, you know, the changes you make and the progress you're making, these are not just 3 month goals. These are lifetime goals. And the changes you're making now are not just going to help you with your fertility. They're going to help you with your overall health as well, right? It's not like these things are just exclusive to reproductive health. They're helpful for so many other things. So we want to create good, healthy habits that we're going to perpetuate beyond this shorter time frame. And I think we also need to be realistic with ourselves that that it could take 6 months, 9 months, a year or more, which is not uncommon. And so we just need to have some patience to kind of endure through that.
And I think that's such an important conversation to be having early on, managing those expectations about timeframes and what is actually normal and what is not. Like, I completely get it. And like, I conceived my daughter after 3 months, and that 3 months was hard. It was long. It was hard. And I know that 3 months is a drop in the bucket compared to so many women that I speak with and work with. And I know that I'm not alone. I know that I get asked a lot by people who are saying, you know, I'm on my second cycle, my third cycle, and I'm getting really frustrated. It's hard. It's definitely a mental game. So I think going into it with those expectations and knowing what's normal, when to start investigating so that you're not, you know, expecting it to happen after one attempt, so that you're not getting yourself disappointed and frustrated and stressed out. Coming from someone who, you know, knew all of this and still did.
Yeah, it's hard, right? I'm not pretending to to think that what we're talking about right now is easy to do, because it's by no means is it easy. Especially by the time someone typically comes to see me, they've already been trying for years, you know, typically. It's the exception that someone, although recently we've had some that have been like, oh, I've been trying for 6 months and now I want to get some support. But in general, it's more like I've been trying for 3 years and I'm at kind of at the end of my road. So when I ask someone to give themselves a little bit more time, I understand what that means. But I think our understanding of time is a little bit different. And for each one of us, that time piece is also different, right? It's different to ask someone to give you a year when they're 42 versus 32. Mm-hmm. So that's another piece that I think we need to be mindful of and kind of how we're approaching things, because that time piece really speeds up as we get older and compresses. And so we have to make these decisions much faster. And that's challenging and that's stressful for everybody. We can only control what we can control. And the most important thing is that we can control a lot of things that are within our power, right? And I think we forget that. We also often ask others to kind of take on some of that control. And I don't think we do that consciously. And by that, I mean, it's so much easier to ask somebody else, you know, a lot of these questions, you know, whether you're looking for those answers by reading a book or a blog post or watching videos or social media, you're giving up some of that. I feel like you're giving up some of that power and control, right? And so even though we support couples, I want to give back that power back to you, right? Like, my goal is that I'm teaching you what's important, what to look at, what to think about, that you don't always have to ask me for the answer, right? You shouldn't always have to ask me for the answer at some point, that you should be able to look at things and recognize like, oh, this makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. Also, Mark said, it's not about being perfect. Like, I don't have to be 100% perfect with what we're doing. I just need to strive for better. So today, this is good enough, right? And I think that's an important lesson, is it's giving yourself back that power and control over the decisions that you make and how you're going to approach things, and not living in fear. You know, so many of the couples, they don't say this outwardly, but I interpret it. I interpret their actions and their words to be one of just being scared, mm-hmm. scared of the outcome of not achieving their goal. And so it scares them into making too many decisions or not taking any decisions, right? And I think that's dangerous as well. We've got to let go of this fear. And I know that part of it is the medical system that we're in that really, unfortunately, perpetuates that fear-based model. But we need to sit with ourselves and kind of understand what our body's telling us, understand what our brain is telling us, what our heart is telling us, what our intuition is telling us, and listen to it a little bit more. What feels right, right? Because if not, we're always making decisions out of being scared of one thing or another. And so I don't pretend to think that I'm always right in the decisions or support that I give couples. I hope so, I try to be, but you know, it's not possible to be 100% correct the whole time. So, you know, I'm okay when couples question me, but I don't want it to be one out of being scared or fear. I want it to be one of like, this just doesn't sit well with me. This doesn't feel right. Like, I think I'd rather do X. And I'm so much more open to that conversation than the conversation of like, I'm just scared this is not going to happen if I don't do this or if I don't take the extra 10 supplements, you know, or whatever it is. And so I really want to encourage listeners to just sit sometimes, just sit and pay attention to the way your body feels. If I listen to my gut, I'm always going to make the right decision, in my opinion. And I think if we all listen to ourselves a little bit more and stop ignoring what what we're hearing from ourselves because of whatever reason, I think we're going to make better decisions for ourselves in terms of when it's time to move to IVF or when it's time to try naturally or when it's time to try something else or whatever it might be, right? So I think that's such an important message for all of us to hear as we're going through fertility treatments. You know, fertility treatments are hard. Time that we were just talking about, the time piece is so difficult, and giving ourselves that time and understanding. And logically, you can say, yes, I know it's going to take more than 3 months, but internally, your body is just like shaking. Why isn't it happening? And I need results now. We've got to just try to settle that a little bit more and just sit with ourselves and trust a little bit more in yourself and the process and what you're doing. You know, you're doing it for a reason. And I think it's important that we give it that time to see if it's going to work as well.
Do you have any go-to tools or resources for helping couples to manage that side of things, the emotional, the stress, the fear? What are your sort of go-tos for that? Just talking through it as much as possible?
I think it's important for couples to talk through it. I think it gets a little bit tricky if we're always trying to talk through it, right? Yeah. If all of our conversations are always about fertility and getting pregnant or not getting pregnant, it gets old very quickly for, mm-hmm. I think, for everybody. And it becomes very difficult. The relationship really changes. So I like to do several things, one of which is my most comfortable place. And I think this is true for everybody, whether you've done it or not, and allowed yourself. But I think our most comfortable place where we can really listen to our body and pay attention is in nature someplace. It's just being in nature. That could just be a hike. That could be a swim, that whatever it might be, camping. You're just disconnecting and you're allowing your body to just be. And then that's what I feel like, that's when it talks the best to us. You know, and hopefully that's when we listen the best. So my first recommendation is spend more time in nature as an individual and as a couple. Mm-hmm. I feel like we have our best conversations when we're with each other and with ourselves, when we're disconnected. So that's the first thing that I would say. The second thing is, we also, with this fear piece, is we need to retrain our mind. All the doctors you've spoken to have said, you can't, you won't, it's not possible. They've told you all the negative reasons why it's not going to happen. And so now that's all your brain hears. So you've got to retrain that. And if that is through positive affirmations, if that's through journaling, listening to meditations, whatever it might be, then that's what you need to do. And you need to do it regularly, because it takes a lot of, it actually takes 2 or 3 times more effort to change and go back to believing in yourself and thinking positively after you've been told all those negative things. So it's really an uphill battle. We've really got to work much harder to get to that place. So so we need to create regular habits and tools to do that. Meditation's a beautiful way to do that, where you're just going to sit and be. Journaling, positive affirmations, listening to meditations, like these are all wonderful tools to help you get there. So those are two big important things. And then the last important thing that I think is valuable in this conversation is to, you can't actually have these conversations with your partner on a daily or weekly basis. I think that's detrimental to your relationship. Your relationship needs to be much more than your fertility journey or your children, right? And if you don't have children now and you're trying to get pregnant again, what you'll realize very quickly when you do have children is your relationship becomes all about the kids.
It's all about them.
Right? And so you still need to foster your own relationship and make sure it's really strong. And you do that through many ways, right? Going on dates and going out and whatever, spending time together alone without the kids. So you can reconnect. Well, if your relationship prior to that is all about fertility, neither one of you are going to like each other at the end, unfortunately. It's just not, it's not a healthy process. So you need to have, your relationship needs to be much more than that, which means you can't actually have those conversations on a regular basis. And so my suggestion is that you draw a line in the sand. You make a decision today about what you're going to do as a couple, like, okay, we're going to try X, Y, and Z, and we're going to follow that process. But you can't question that process. I mean, unless something major happens, you can't question that process until you get to that, whatever that point in time is in the future that you've decided. Is that 6 months from now, 5 months from now, 3 months from now, 12 months, whatever it is that you both agreed upon, you're marking that date in the calendar. And that's when you're revisiting that topic again, right? Now, you can get to that point in time and it could be a short conversation. Like, I'm good with this process. Like, I like what we're doing. We're seeing some results. Let's set another time in the future, right? Or you're going to have a bigger conversation, whatever it might be. But I think that helps. One, it helps both of you know that, like, this is when we're going to be having this conversation. Two, it helps because then if you start to have these conversations in between that time frame, you both need to actually check each other and say, okay, we weren't going to have this conversation until X date. So now, you know, we need to find something else to talk about, right? It could be about, you know, where vacation we want to go, whatever it might be, but it can't be about that. And I think that's a really healthy piece. Like, obviously there are times where you have to break that because things happen and, you know, you've got to address them. But in general, I think that's a really important piece. And the couples that I find that are able to follow that successfully, you know, their relationship is much healthier at the end of this whole process.
I think that is such a healthy outlook and such incredible advice. I think it's so easy to become consumed by the process. And you have to, as you said, you have to be bigger than that. You still have a life to live. And
yeah,
however long this process takes, you can't just be 100% in that all the time because, yeah, it's all too consuming for you. So I think that's incredible advice.
Yeah. And I would mention to everybody as well, is like, I hear this all the time. We put all these things on hold because we were trying to get pregnant, right? It's this perpetual like, oh, well, we thought we'd be pregnant by now. So we were going to take that trip, but we decided not, you know, whatever it might be. Don't put your life on hold. You're going to be frustrated more and you're going to regret that you didn't do those things. Mm. You still have to live your life. Now, it doesn't mean that you're going to go out partying every night. So we do have to find balance, but like you still need to live your life. You still need to be social. You still need to, you know, see the world or whatever it is that you want to do. So please don't put your life on hold either.
Yes, I think that is so important. We have touched on it a few times now, this concept of time, especially as people get older and egg quality, ovarian reserve, age, all of these things come into play. So can you talk us through potential factors that can impact our ovarian reserve and what we can do when we are getting older, potentially, you know, late 30s, early 40s? What can we do when time is not necessarily on our side?
Yeah. So, you know, obviously the biggest factor with ovarian reserve and egg quality is going to be time and age. Unfortunately, those are the two things we can't control, right? So it doesn't do us any service to spend a lot of time worrying and focusing on, oh, I'm just getting older or time's running out. Because truly, like, those are the things that are just going to make you more scared and more stressed because you can't control them. So when it comes to age, I think your best bet is to focus on your cellular age, not how long you've lived. And that is something that's way more valuable because you can impact that.
Yes.
And I think it's really just important to focus on the things you can control, which is a lot, by the way. You know, we tend to focus on the two things we can't control, but there's so many things that we should be focusing on that we can. So again, just like I mentioned with men, we should not be looking at anything beyond the basics if our basics are not sound. So I don't have to revisit that because it's basically the same thing I said for men, but you really do need to spend your time on those things. And that needs to be the foundational piece. That's what everything is built upon. The next thing that I think is really important, and I say this when it comes to egg quality and ovarian reserve is that regardless of your age, I don't want you to make the assumption that your fertility issues are egg quality related or ovarian reserve related. I want you to have data that proves that before you start spending your time focusing on that. So what do I mean by that? I cannot tell you how many, and today's a perfect example. I'm going to give a great example of this. How many women I speak to who are in their 40s, whose hormones look amazing, okay? But they're, the only thing that they're told to do is focus on egg quality. Mm-hmm. So it can't always be about egg quality. And I know that everything you read says that, but I'm here to tell you that it's not the case. So I think she was 46 today. Her AMH is 1.71 at 46. It's to just show you that everyone who would look at her, if you just said 46, they would say, oh, it's egg quality or ovarian reserve in her case. But her ovarian reserve looks good. Her FSH also looks good. And her estrogen also looks good. So it's not about her hormones. Mm-hmm. So we need to dig deeper into that situation. So I don't like for everyone to get pigeonholed. And I'm not saying that when we get into our late 30s or early 40s or wherever we are in our 40s, that we don't support egg quality a little bit, fine. But it shouldn't be all you do if you don't know that that's what you really need. And so that really comes back to testing. I want everyone to get a well-rounded, good assessment so they understand where their deficiencies are, what areas need to be supported. And then let's focus on those things because it might not be egg quality. It might be that your digestive system's not functioning properly or your immune system is not functioning properly or it's blood circulation or whatever it might be. And so let's focus on the things that need that support and let's give it what it needs. And then if we want to like sprinkle in a little bit of egg quality support here and there, that's fine. But everything shouldn't be there. And at some point, you know, does it really make a difference if we're taking 5 supplements for egg quality support or 15 supplements for egg quality support? Like, does it really make a difference at that point? I don't think so. I mean, there's only so much that your cells can absorb and so much that they can manage. And so I think as long as we're doing enough, I think that's really, really valuable when it comes to that. And then focusing on the main things that our body really needs. Like we forego some of the basics because we're trying to take that 10th or 11th supplement that was supposed to be for egg quality. So I that's something that I've learned over the years. And I think it's really important that we understand that. And it's difficult as a couple going through fertility treatments to recognize some of those things and be okay with it, right? Like, okay, well, maybe this is enough for this and I just need to focus on these other areas. So if you don't have somebody that you're working with who can help assess your overall picture and guide you to say, okay, well, these are the areas I think you should spend more time in, I think we can all do a decent job of self-reflection and self-assessment to understand what areas need more support. As human beings, we like to focus on the things that we're good at. So I love cooking and I'm in the kitchen and I love to shop for good, healthy food, then if I feel like I need to do better, that's where I'm going to go. I'm just going to do more of that. And the reality is I probably don't need to do more of that. I just need to continue doing what I'm doing. And I need to look at the areas that really need more of my attention. That might be sleep. That might be exercise. That might be stress management, whatever it is. I think we can all self-assess ourselves and our health and lifestyle in some way to be able to understand what areas do really need more of our attention, right? And if you have a hard time knowing where to start, just start from the top of your head all the way down. Be like, okay, do I think clearly? Do I feel good? Do I process information properly? Do I sleep well, right? Do my lungs function properly? Do I catch colds all the time, right? If you're just going all from top to bottom, you can start to assess your health and say, well, you know what? I do catch colds 4, 5, 6 times a year. That's probably not normal. Maybe I need a little bit more support there. And, you know, I do tend to stay up quite a bit and binge watch Netflix, and I don't get to sleep. I compromise my sleep for that. So maybe I've got to change some of those habits. I think we can all really do that. And I think if we do some more of that, we'll actually be able to get ourselves to a pretty good place. Now, it's hard to hold ourselves accountable, so sometimes we do want someone to help lift us up and keep us going. And it's difficult as just a regular couple to be able to look at our lab work sometimes and run tests and understand what it all means. But I think we could do a fair amount on our own before we ever get to that point. And I think that's a good tool if we don't have somebody that we can lean on and rely on who can help guide us through that process.
I think that's so helpful. And I think you're absolutely right. We have that intuitive, like if we sat there and did that head to toe scan, I think we could all put our hand up and say, yep, this is where I need to improve. I think we can do it, but as you said, we don't like to do it. It's not comfortable. And we like to focus on the things that we're good at. So that's where I'll improve things because I like that and that's easy.
Right.
I think, yeah, and you can do so much in that respect before you then have to go through the process of testing and blood tests and everything else that you have to do. It's a simple one that you can literally do right now, top to toe scan. I think that's
right.
Really.
Yeah, anyone could do it, and we can do it repeatedly, right? Like, okay, how does it feel today?
It's a really good check-in for you too. Like we talked about, semen analysis, how we don't have that tool to be able to constantly look, but if we're using that tool, it's a really good one to be able to, how am I going, how am I tracking, even
right.
in a fertility way, just in a general health way. I think that's
general
a
health
really
way.
Good
right.
tool to have in your toolkit.
Yeah, and your fertility is a reflection of your general health, so
right.
you know, we can't ignore our general health just because we're focused on fertility. It actually needs to go the other way around. Like we just need to make sure our general health is doing well. And then our fertility will start to improve with that.
Exactly right. And that's what you touched on earlier about our immune system and our digestive system. All, everything works together. It's not a standalone thing. And so if you have issues somewhere else, you could absolutely be playing its part. So
yeah.
I love that.
100%.
I'm going to start doing that top to toe analysis.
There we go.
Something that really resonated and stood out to me when I was stalking you before this interview, your idea that there is no such thing as unexplained, which I completely agree with, and that IVF is not your only option. So can you talk me through, I guess, your experiences that have led you to feel so strongly about that? Because I hate the diagnosis of unexplained infertility. So
yeah.
I'd love to hear your thoughts on this.
Sure. I love this topic. Look, I think unexplained just means we didn't ask the right questions. We didn't interpret the information properly. We didn't look in the right places for the right answers. Or maybe we truly just don't have the knowledge to understand why we're having the issues that we're having, but it doesn't mean that there's not a root cause. I also think because you kind of touched on it, like everything's connected when we're talking about our bodies. Well, because of the way our current medical system is designed right now with everyone specializing, and I'm not saying there's a bad thing about it. It's a good thing because you get highly trained, highly informed individuals in these small niche areas, which is very, very helpful. But what that means is that they don't know anything about other areas. And they're also, with the current medical model, I think it's the same in Australia, but I'm not 100% sure. I'm going to use the word allowed. They're not allowed to look into these other areas.
Yeah.
Right. You go
it's
see.
Beyond their scope. You can't.
Right. It's beyond their scope. Right. Yeah. You go see the fertility specialist and you start talking about your digestive system and how it's bothering you. And we're like, sorry, I can't help you with that. You go, you know, over there. And so that doctor is not talking to the other doctor because they're in their own little silos, right? And so as a result of that, our brains have been preconditioned to believe that these things don't communicate with one another. Like, why would my digestive system impact my fertility? That's ridiculous. Or why would my immune system impact my fertility? That's ridiculous. You know, these are totally different systems. Yes, but they all work in concert with one another. And so because of the specialties that we have, we just don't think in the way that we used to think, where all these things are connected. And yes, like, I need to make sure all these systems are working properly so that my fertility works properly, which is why we just mentioned, if your general health is good, your fertility overall will be better. And so that's what this comes to. And I've seen this repeatedly over the years. I mentioned these areas on purpose, like digestive issues are a big one that I see as a big factor for fertility issues that are often ignored because, again, it's the digestive system. It's not the reproductive system. I also see immune issues quite a bit. Stress is a huge one. Now, it's not that that's ignored, because they do say, oh, you know, we've got to manage our stress. We do hear that quite a bit. But we downplay its impact and how important that is, or how impactful that is, good or bad, to our reproductive system and our hormones. And stress is a huge one. And we live in a very stressful world. Unfortunately, right now, also, I would say, a very stressful time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of individuals are struggling just to get by. You know, whether it's stress from work, stress from life, stress from the world, stress from family, you know, whatever it might be, personal stress, because we expect so much from ourselves. You know, these are all things that impact our health dramatically. And if we're not able to find ways to manage those things and address them, then it's just going to be very difficult for us to get pregnant. And I see that repeatedly. So I think the reason why we get this diagnosis of unexplained is because it's not really that it's unexplained. It's just that they can't look into these other areas and say, oh, that's why. And it's really interesting. I've seen more and more of this. It's like I've seen women who go in and they have a diagnosis. They're like, they have endometriosis or they have PCOS or whatever it might be. And then the doctor still says it's unexplained. And I'm trying to understand, well, I how could those two things go on the same document, right? Like, how do you put both of those on the same chart note, one above the other? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. So, and I think they say this because they don't want to lean on some of those things as a cause for fertility. I also think maybe it's, you know, they're trying to push people to do IVF. And you did bring up IVF earlier. And I would say is like, I'm a huge fan of IVF for everyone out there. I think there's a huge place for it and a huge need for it. And I work with a lot of fertility clinics and a lot of IVF doctors, and I have a lot of respect for them. I just think that couples end up going towards IVF prematurely or unnecessarily, mm-hmm. because of the way we believe IVF can work and what we think it can do. And IVF is not a guarantee. It's not 100% successful. It's actually below 50% in most cases. So, and I haven't seen this change very much, but in general, most people still need almost 3 IVF cycles to be successful. And I said the exact same thing 20 years ago. So it's not like that has changed dramatically. So we can't believe that IVF is going to be the answer to everything. I think it absolutely has a place and a need, but it's not for everyone. And it shouldn't be the first line of intervention for fertility treatments. It should be the last, which is the way it was created. So I just think we need to approach it a little bit differently and have a different mindset. I also think, coming back to what I said earlier, it's like we lose a lot of our control, right? It's like we're always just looking for someone else to fix the problem, to solve the issue. Well, okay, well, IVF will take care of it. No problem. Mm-hmm. Well, it's just, you know, my sperm quality is just so IVF will take care of it. Well, that takes away our empowerment. And it also takes away our responsibility. Well, okay, so if IVF fixes it and I go get pregnant with that, well, then I could keep drinking my beers and alcohol, and I don't have to change my lifestyle, and I could keep doing whatever I want. Who cares? Right? So we don't take any personal responsibility for it. Again, there's not that there's not a place for it, but is it really the first line of intervention that we should be using, or really should we be taking more responsibility and control over our health and our outcomes? And then if we're not successful, use that as an option.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think a lot of people forget that all of those lifestyle factors, all of those things that we should be implementing first are the things that are going to maximize your chances of success with IVF. And it's not
100%.
It's not the quick fix. And I don't think, you know, like it's not being addressed. Like if you went straight to an IVF clinic without seeing these practitioners in between that are going to talk you through that, those lifestyle changes, it's not discussed. So yeah, you're going to keep living your life and drinking your beer and doing whatever you're doing, thinking, oh, well, yeah, it'll fix it. Which,
right.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. It's absolutely got its place, but it's used, as you said, prematurely and unnecessarily.
Yeah, I do believe like a high number of couples who go through IVF really didn't need to ever go, and probably would have been successful on their own if they gave themselves some time and, you know, made the necessary changes to get the results that they're looking for.
So how can we find this balance? How can we use medical intervention when we need it? And how can we also incorporate these more natural approaches that are within our control? How do we incorporate these two? I'm asking a lot of you here.
Well, I would love to see – one thing I would love to see is more for us to be more proactive earlier in the process. You know, I think that if we this would be a funny thing to see, but you know, when everyone's going to all those bridal shows to find out, you know, how to do all their wedding stuff, you know, it'd be nice if someone was talking about being proactive about taking care of yourself and your health, so that way when you want to have a child, you know, 3 months, 6 months, a year into your marriage or whatever it is, that process is much easier. So I'd love to see this happen sooner, right? Like that we are just being more proactive and taking care of ourselves sooner in the process. Doesn't mean we have to start trying sooner, because I know everyone's got the career goals and whatnot, but just so we're just taking care of ourselves sooner. I also think that if we already know that we have health issues, address them now. Don't wait, right? Don't wait like, oh, I'll just take care of that later. You know, take care of those things now. It will help you tenfold in the future. So, you know, address those things and just setting up good daily habits. I think that's really important. But also, you know, I don't want to put unnecessary stress on anybody in terms of doing testing prematurely and those sorts of things. But there's something to be said for it. I don't think there's any harm in doing those things in the right circumstance for the right individuals who are not going to let it kind of, you know, get away from themselves. Mm-hmm. So you could do some, you know, be proactive in terms of testing as well. I think those are some key things, but give yourself time. Like we started this conversation about time. And I think if we just say, when we get married, we're going to enjoy life, and we know that we want to have children. And so what are we going to start to do now when we are getting married and we're just newlyweds? That's going to set us up for success in the future to do that. You know, I'd love for someone to say, like, I'd love, Mark, I want to work with you because I want to be pregnant in 6 months, versus Mark, I want to work with you because I've been trying for 3 years and nothing's worked. And I think that approach is just really different, and something that we can all use. I don't pretend to think that's going to happen very easily, but that would be in an ideal world. I think that would be it. In our current system, is just for us to take a little bit more responsibility for our own actions. And if we give ourselves enough time to make the necessary changes, and just to try, right? Like, we're going to try for a year and just see what happens. And we're just going to enjoy it. And I would just say, don't track and don't get overly consumed with all the things during that time. Just enjoy each other. Like, just have sex because you want to. Just have intercourse because you want to. You guys want to be with each other. Enjoy life. And hopefully those things start to work out. But once you know that there's an issue, then let's be proactive about addressing it.
And that's the way to help to curb the fear and the anxiety and the stress and everything that comes on into it too, because you're giving yourself that time and you're giving yourself that grace period where
just see what happens.
Yeah,
absolutely. I would love to see that happen more.
I love your idea of the bridal show. I totally want to go and set up a booth at a bridal show.
I thought about it for so long. I'm like, I can't go there. People would never stop. They're like, what are you doing?
What are you doing here? I love it. I think that is such a funny idea. So clever. Because it's such a good comparison, I think. Like, people talk about
right. How
long do you spend planning your wedding? How much money do you spend on your wedding? How much preparation has gone into this wedding? And then it's how much of that have you factored into the preconception and the preparation component? Of pregnancy.
It's and none of it, because they just expect to get pregnant. And I will say, as you say, that part of it is education. Yeah. We are misled as teenagers.
Yes.
Exactly. Because everyone's scared that teenagers are going to have children. And so we're misled as teenagers to believe that we look at our boyfriend or our girlfriend and we're going to get pregnant. Mm-hmm. And if we touch them at any time in the cycle, we're going to get pregnant. And what that breeds is, oh, well, when I'm ready, I'll just turn it on. It'll just happen. No big deal. So that education piece also needs to change. And I don't know if it will, but it definitely needs to change.
Yeah. That's a whole other conversation, isn't it? But it's where it starts.
100%.
I was having this conversation with my husband yesterday because we have a daughter. She's only 18 months old. And we were talking about the teenage years and, you know, my husband joking about getting out the shotgun when the boys start coming around and all that sort of thing. And he said, your job is to make sure she doesn't get pregnant. And I said, and I started panicking and saying, oh, but, you know, I don't want her to go on the pill, all these things, given what I do. And then he's like, well, that's a lot of pressure on you, isn't it? Because you've got to sit her down and you've got to do all these things. I thought, oh my God, I'm living it. But it's funny because it is. And like, even everything that I know, it was still that initial panic of, she might get pregnant. And it's just funny that it's so deeply ingrained in us from such an early age that you know, as you said, you will look at a boy and you will get pregnant. I don't know how, as you said, I don't know how or if it's ever going to change, but yeah.
Yeah, I get it. Look, as parents, I've got two boys. I want to scare them because I don't want them to end up in that situation, right?
Yeah.
Too early. But in the same token, I don't want to make them believe something that's not true.
Exactly.
So, they've got their education for me on sex ed well before they ever started at school. So the school is nothing compared to the education I give them in the house.
they're very lucky to have someone who can sit down and openly discuss it with them. I'm sure they're mortified.
Oh, they don't want to have that conversation with me.
They don't want to know. I think it is. It's so valuable. And I think the more people and like the more women who are being proactive and learning all of this stuff that can then pass that on to their children, I think that's where it's going to happen, because I don't think it's going to happen through a
school system. Or I think if we just have honest conversations with the kids and teach them personal responsibility, you know, in that process, I think a lot can be taken care of in that way. And you just need to have open, ongoing conversations. You know, okay, you're in a relationship now. Okay, let's have that conversation, right? And just reminders always about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, very interesting. For any individuals, for any couples that are listening who are facing fertility challenges, what advice, what words of encouragement do you have that you can offer them to wrap things up? You've produced so many nuggets of wisdom along the way, but one final word of advice that comes to mind.
Yeah, I just, you know, I always believe it's possible. You know, I get messages all the time, can I get pregnant? I'm 43 with whatever circumstance. And I'm always the man of the glasses half full. Mm-hmm. But I don't do that unrealistically. And so I believe that all of us have the potential and ability to have children, regardless of where we're at in our fertility journey. But one, we need to believe in ourselves. Two, we need to give ourselves the space to be able to achieve those things. And three, we need support. You know, I don't know anyone in life who hasn't been successful, who's been successful that hasn't had support on the way to get there, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it was a teacher who inspired them and really supported them, whether it was a coach that allowed them to be successful, whether it was a mentor, whatever it is, we all need support to get there. There's only so much we can do on our own because we don't know what we don't know. So I just think that we need to be positive and optimistic with ourselves because it is possible regardless of what everybody has told you. And if you can be patient and give yourself a little bit of time and find the right support, then I think it's absolutely possible that you can have the family of your dreams.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for all of the wisdom and the knowledge that you have shared in our chat. I feel like I could ask you 100 more questions, but I'm not going to take up that much time. I really appreciate your time. And I think so many people listening are going to find this really valuable.
Oh, thank you. That's really sweet. I hope they do. And I appreciate you having me on the show. So thank you.
Oh, pleasure to have you.
If you've made it this far, you deserve a huge virtual hug because you just finished another episode of the Fertility Co podcast. New episodes are released every Wednesday, so make sure you hit subscribe now so you don't miss when the latest goes live. Why not make my day and leave me a quick rating and review while you're over there? If you want more, head on over to Instagram at Fertility Co, slide on into my DMs and say hello, or you can visit fertilityco.com.au/podcast for show notes and access to all of the freebies that I talked about in this episode. Until next time.
Let's talk about TempDrop. TempDrop's wearable sensor and accompanying charting app brings the full fertility tracking solution right to your phone. Wear the TempDrop sensor on your upper arm during sleep and then just sync to the charting app whenever it's convenient for you. TempDrop believes that every woman should be empowered and equipped with the knowledge to take control of their body. Sound familiar? That's where TempDrop steps in to provide clear, science-backed technology to help you to better track your cycle. I only recommend products that I use and love, and I love my TempDrop tracker. You can get 10% off your tracker with the code AFFertilityCo or head to fertilityco.com.au/TempDrop for more information.